Blog Talk Radio.
Peter Paul Brizzella. We're playing Dixie because today would be about the 200th anniversary of the death of Jefferson Davis. Most people who don't delve into history, still have this cult, think of him, or they know of him as the presidency of the Confederate States of America. But he was a U.S. senator, a war hero in the Black Hawk and the Mexican Wars. Secretary of War in the Franklin Pierce administration. In fact, Franklin Pierce was probably the most handsome man to be in the presidency and one of the most ineffective and incompetent, and of course that may be applied to the current occupant of the White House. But anyway, Jefferson Davis has gotten a bad rap from the political opportunists, people who want to rewrite history and have successfully rewritten it. But, and it's also interesting about the history of the song Dixie. Dixie, which was banned after the Civil War, after the Union of the North had won, was actually written by a Northerner, a guy named Dan Emmett, prior to the Civil War. He was in a minstrel band, and he was of German extraction. I think he was from Ohio, and he was paid $5 for it. And it was a big fight over the copyright and all that, and eventually he was paid $600 for the copyright rights. But other musical publishers made a fortune off of that song, and it was the unofficial anthem of the South, and it's still popular today. Football teams play it. But getting back to Jefferson Davis and why he is relevant to the issues of states' rights today. He was basically a conservative one to keep the Union together. He was in the same category as Robert E. Lee, graduate. They both went to West Point. Both served in the Mexican War. Both were respected military personnel. In fact, Jefferson Davis had written a manual of tactics for the U.S. Army. He also advocated the turning over of forts into schools of instructions in the states where these forts were located. And as Secretary of War, it said that he brought in camels for the soldiers in the Southwest, and the joke is today some of those camels or the descendants of those camels are still running around the Southwest. But he advocated the protection of the states from the predatory incursions upon state rights by the federal government. And that's an issue that we face today, and they're not talking about it in these terms, but Governor Brewer, the governor of Texas, other governors are talking about this, but not using these terms because of this fascist imposition of Obamacare or Reed Care or Pelosi Care upon people, telling the populace, the citizens, that they have to buy into this program or else they're going to face fines. And that's never happened in the whole history of the United States, nor is it, we feel, is it illegal and will have to be overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. Also about Jefferson Davis, he had some descendants who I had talked to who lived here in California. Fascinating guy. After the Union of the North defeated the South, and Lee and Grant signed a peace accord at Appomattox, they were looking for Jefferson Davis, and there were all kinds of rumors that he escaped dressed as a woman and all that. Eventually, he was captured. They wanted to hang him, but he was in prison. He died in 1889. But the issues that he talked about, that states had rights, and when they got out of the Confederacy, not the Confederacy, but the first, before we became the federal United States, there was the a Confederate union, similar to what is in Canada, where the federal government up there in Ottawa has the rights of defense, foreign policy, negotiate foreign policy, international agreements, but the provinces, as they're called, what would be their states, have all kinds of rights, and there's always been this issue. It's a little different up there between the French and the English bankers and the financial people in what they call Bloor Street in Toronto and Ontario, and the Quebecois, or what they call the white niggers, and that's their phrase, not mine, of Quebec. And there's always been this fight up there between them and the people in the West, Saskatchewan, Alberta, which has a lot of mineral resources, oil, and British Columbia, which considers itself the California of Canada. And part of my family is descended from the Acadians, my mother's side, and I was went to a school, Catholic school, run by French Canadian nuns and brothers, and learned Pidgin French, which I've since forgotten. But it's interesting, the history of Canada and how all this plays in, and how, in effect, what the South was doing when it seceded was trying to set up a reset up that type of system, where the strong powers in this union were with the states rather than with the federal government. But they lost, and of course we had the carpetbaggers, and we still have them. Incidentally, talking about national politicians, did anybody see the U.S. representative, the Speaker of the House? I hope she's not going to be speaking there much longer. She did her thing about the word. Nobody knows, even Catholics who are familiar with some Catholic theology, knows what the hell she was talking about, and she looks like she was coming off of some kind of high or drugs or, you know, there have been serious allegations that she's got a cocaine problem. And it wouldn't be surprising, you know, considering that the guy she succeeded, or one of the people in who represented in San Francisco, had to leave Congress because of his cocaine problem. So, you know, but people were really wondering, what the hell was Nancy Pelosi talking about and looking like? They weren't that close zooming of the cameras on her face or her nose, but everybody was just bewildered by her saying the word and looking like she was in some kind of transformation or whatever. But, you know, hopefully she'll retire. She's over 70, and it's, you know, she's got to, either that or the crook, as they say in the vaudeville, has got to come out and yank her off the stage because people are getting tired of her act. It's long overdue for retirement. But also the other thing, as Secretary of War in the Pierce cabinet, Jefferson Davis, he was also a U.S. Senator from Mississippi, and he opposed secession. He was very conservative about that, trying to keep the Union together and peacefully resolve the differences. But he also promoted and supported the building of the Southern Pacific Railroad, which helped open the West, and, of course, the Transcontinental Railroad, which finally they united it during the rails, during, I think, Lincoln's administration at the tail end there, at Promontory Point in Utah. And that united the Pacific coast with the Atlantic coast. Very important. And, of course, they did the same thing up in Canada with the Canadian Pacific Railroad. You know, the railroads were very important in bringing the far reaches of the country together, or the continent in that case. And, unfortunately, Jefferson Davis has not really gotten full rehabilitation by the historians. He died in 1889. Other interesting events today. In 1621, the Dutch East Indies Corporation, was the Exxon of its day, in effect, some people think that, got a charter for New York, and of course we had, what the hell was his name, I forgot, he was Peter, oh, how could I be, I missed this, but anyway, the last, Peter Stuyvesant. Last governor, Dutch governor of New York, and of course the Dutch bought what is now New York City for some trinkets worth about $21. And for people who are we're concerned about the habeas corpus and rights of poor defendants, pauper defendants. 1960, the U.S. Supreme Court, based on a handwritten letter in pencil by an illiterate named Gideon, who was kind of a gentle ne'er-do-well in Florida, had his rights violated, and he wrote about his rights, and it got into the hands of a clerk at the U.S. Supreme Court, because a lot of this stuff, that's how it comes before the justices. They get over about 10,000 cases a year, and there's no way they can hear all these or go through them, and that's why they have law clerks who are supposed to be honest and competent, and it's quite a prestigious position. A lot of these guys go on to become federal judges. Some have also become a U.S. Supreme Court justices, associate justices. But that's the landmark decision that even impoverished, pauperous defendants have the right to an attorney. And hopefully that attorney was competent. We're seeing more and more incompetent attorneys, and they're highly paid, and the taxpayers pay on both ends, their salaries, their retirement, their health care, their vacations, subsidized housing for those who get this. And we'll get into that. It's quite a scandal just in that aspect. And in 1989, we had the Tiananmen Square massacre. And who can forget the picture of that student standing in front of that massive tank and with the flower, I think that's what it was, and what happened when they gave the commissars gave the order to crush the student protest, and that guy was run over by that tank. Just horrible. Similar to that woman, young student in the protest in Iran who was killed during the protest, and this was caught on cell phone. Of course, they didn't have cell phones in 1989, but now they do. And this is what I call the latest phase of the Gutenberg Revolution, a media revolution. And also, we could trace this back to Rodney King, the guy who had the video cam that day, and that night, who caught the scene, although it's still controversial to that day, claiming that Rodney King was on uppers and the cops had to do what they did, or the Highway Patrol and the LAPD, to subdue this guy, and he was no midget. So, that's where it's at. They can no longer censor stuff as long as their video camcorders around, cell telephones, camera phones. We've gone to the latest phase of the Gutenberg Revolution. And also today, we had George V, the son of Edward VII, my favorite king, Queen Victoria's grandson. He was born today. One of the greatest actors in Shakespeare, Maurice Evans, you should see his Macbeth. He was born today. We have a vice president, a guy named Garrett Augustus Hobart, vice president in 1897 to 1999. And then those of you who drive Oldsmobiles, which General Motors no longer makes, guy's name was Ransom Eli Olt, who invented the Oldsmobile car. And this is another plus, and it's not well publicized in history. Dr. Charles Drew, black doctor, invented a method for extracting blood plasma from blood. And he saved, because of his invention, his medical techniques and expertise, saved a lot of lives during World War II in the battlefield. And still, they during the early part of the war, American soldiers, they separated, quote, black blood from white blood. I don't know what they did with Asian blood. But the segregation, it was so stupid and so callous. I finally realized that blood is blood, except, you know, the difference of O and XY and all that, or the different blood types. But they were doing that segregation of blood even as early as that in blood plasma. And then in the entertainment field, we have the great Jewish opera singer, Jan Pierce. He was born today. And then entertainment, and this is another fascinating black personality. Josephine Baker was born today, a St. Louis girl, born illegitimate child. Went to Paris during the 20s, like a lot of blacks, Sidney Bechet, and the what they call the Lost Generation. And she scandalized and fascinated people with her dances. On the stage at the Folies Bergère. And what's interesting, during World War II, she, like Alice Toklas and Gertrude Stein, had stayed in France, And she worked in the French Resistance, and she was honored with, the Croix de Guerre. And she also adopted all of these children. A great entertainer. And then she lost all her money trying to support these kids at the chateau and had to come back on the stage, and she died, I think, several years ago. Paulette Gardard, great actress, was born today. And then people, Tony Curtis, whose daughter is an actress, who's been doing all of these commercials for this food or supplement for women. And this is interesting. Tony Curtis is a good Jewish boy from New York. His name was Bernard Schwartz. He was born today. A bad Jewish boy was born today. Allen Ginsberg, who wrote Howl, who supported NAMBLA and homosexual activists, and he was born today. Among the deaths, one of the most fascinating and creative people in the short span of life was George Bizet. Those of you who like the opera Carmen, and he wrote a lot of stuff that's still played today, still enjoyed. I think he died before he was 35. And then the modern pope, Angelo Roccalli, who was also papal nuncio to Turkey, John 23rd, he died today. He opened up I can't pronounce the Italian word, but it was openness, and he opened the Catholic Church after Pius XII and Pope Paul II. And then we had those of you who watched the black and white TV of the Nelsons. Ozzie Nelson died today. And then the interesting events, and this is relevant to Florida today, Hernando de Soto claimed Florida for the Spanish crown. And, of course, Florida now is going to be claimed by the oil spill started by BP. Incidentally, some of the gas stations here in the Bay Area are sporting the American flag. Of course, you see the BP emblem. I think some have taken it down, and they are concerned about the fall off of sales. But we see the American flag. And we'll put this up on our YouTube site, Amicus Veritas on YouTube, AmicusVeritas. And then in 1918, getting back to the U.S. Supreme Court, child labor laws were declared unconstitutional. Shame on them. And then in 1919, in Chicago, the first black insurance company was set up, Liberty Mutual. Now, what people don't understand about blacks and insurance, the older blacks, was those who came out of the Southern tradition of the local church of the preacher and all of that, who was the leader in the community because he was supposed to be educated, they all were concerned about being buried in the church. So they would buy what they would call debit insurance. Every week, the insurance man would come around. They'd have a little packet where they put what little money they earned into that packet to pay their insurance so that when they died, they'd have $1,000 or more for the casket and the funeral, and so they could be buried in holy ground. And so that's where that's at. So a lot of blacks who have moved on from that and have insurance policies, those who can afford it, like everybody else from Prudential and Mutual of New York and all of that. But that's where a lot of that came from, and it's very interesting how they would do everything they could to pay that insurance, what they call their burial money, and that was the first company that set it up. And then what else do we have here? Oh, yes, this is very relevant today with the apprehension of Joran van der Sloot, the son of a judge who thought he could get away with we think, and this is an allegation, of two murders. The young woman from Alabama, and this girl that he was in the hotel room with, blood all over the place, and he fled from Peru to Chile. Well, if this border dispute was still going on, Peru and Chile settled their border dispute, and nobody could get across or get, or they weren't monitoring their border stations. But it's interesting that van der Sloot, the kid, fled from Peru, left that hotel, but he was caught on the camera, and fled through Chile and was recognized. Now, of course, it's kind of cynical looking at that. We have some pictures about that deal with something that these kids in Aruba, van der Sloot's younger brother, who's called the Pimp, I think, We were informed about this, or the Shadow was informed about this, the new Shadow was informed about this, regarding something that's going on or has gone on down there, that young women have been seduced and abducted, allegedly, when they came down on these cruise ships and the planes to party down there after graduation or whatever. And some of the disappearance of these young people, and some boys that may be also be involved, were by pedophiles in allegedly in the Middle Eastern countries. Now, interestingly, and she dropped this, Senator Blanche Lincoln did chair a committee in Congress about the abduction of children in the Middle East, and then all of a sudden it was dropped. So she had an issue, and she dropped it. I don't know why. And then today, in 1949, the first black graduate, graduated from the Naval Academy. No, the Navy has been hidebound, very segregationist. During World War II, they could only serve, and even the Filipinos and other Asians could only serve as mess boys. And it was, and those who did serve as sailors, they were still in segregated facilities. So that all changed in 1949, and now we have blacks who are admirals or have been admirals and have risen to the ranks. Hopefully, they're all competent and not treacherous and traitors. And let's see, the other things we should be concerned about, what's the matter with California? One of the problems is people like Nancy Pelosi. And then a great book has come out, and I recommend it as a supplemental book for all high school students. Jack Cashel is probably one of the most prolific writers. He's not like, what's that awful woman, Triana, who writes these romantic, trashy potboilers. She just grinds them out. But he comes out with about a book a year, and he, of course, he did What's the Matter with California, which was censored and suppressed in San Francisco, with the exception of KSFO. And it was a lot of relevant issues, and not only the issue dealing with Stephen Nery, he only got part of the story, because the editor of that book was Mary Matlin, who is the wife of James Carville, who has embraced a lot of the Clinton agenda, and, you know, so we'll explain why a lot of things didn't get published in that book. And to, you know, wanted to make sure the book got out, because there's a lot of issues in it, such as the housing issues that are relevant to the entire state. The other thing is, what would, I'm going to bring this up next week, but looking at ecological disasters, you look at people who have displayed executive leadership since Obama was last from Chicago. Question a lot of people are asking who are familiar with Chicago and Cook County and Illinois real politics, what would Mayor Daley have done if there had been an oil spill in Lake Michigan? Do you think he would dawdle for 45 days or whatever? He'd be on it right away, because his machine, or the machine which he was part of, because he didn't start that machine, but he knew how to control it, and he got control over it. But he wouldn't dawdle. He would be on them right away to plug that well, stop the pollution. Same thing here in San Francisco with San Francisco's last greatest, honest, ethical mayor, George Christopher. If there were an oil spill in the San Francisco Bay, he wouldn't dawdle. He would be on them to clean it up. He would bring in whatever resources the federal government had. That's our belief. I didn't know Mayor Daley, although I'd seen him once, and I'd done some work as a student in the machine regarding votes in the district. But George Christopher I knew for 10 years. And these are people who had experience, which Obama didn't have. And it's about time that people say, hey, look at this guy. And frankly, there are those of us who think it's time for him to say, okay, I did my thing, it's time to resign, move on, and do something else. Because he's showing his gross incompetence, and these scandals are getting even worse. If he had been white and that had been Nixon, do you think that Nixon would have been allowed to survive with all these serious and unanswered allegations of bribery to keep people out of running for a position, which they thought that the administration needed to push their program, and they're bribing, offering a federal position, which is in violation of the Hatch Act. And it's very important that we should recognize that there are media people who are starting to read black letter law. Thank you, Mr. Hannity. You know, law. One of the big political myths is only lawyers know the law. That is one of the biggest political myths, frauds, and fictions that there is. People who go to law school do not learn law per se. They go there to learn how to think like a lawyer, how to write like a lawyer, how to write a brief, presumably how to research, presumably to learn ethics, which we some of the schools seem to jettison. You look at all the lawyers who engage in all this crooked activity, and most of the lawyers in Congress are part of the problem there. And most of the political corruption trials that have occurred in the United States have involved lawyers on one end or the other. I always like to point at Watergate. In Watergate, all the lawyers went to jail. It was the accountant, Maurice Stans, who got acquitted. So get out, get away from that idea that only lawyers know the law. And remember, if you are a defendant or people you know are defendants, and you don't know the law and you haven't bothered to research it, and you are a defendant, what does the judge say? Ignorance of the law is no excuse. And if you come back with, or if that person comes back with, well, Your Honor, I'm not a lawyer. The lawyer says, and I should walk. Well, you know where you walk, where you walk to and who you'll be accompanied by? The bailiff into the hands of the sheriff, and if it's a serious offense, into a state prison or federal prison. So wake up and get out of this myth that only lawyers know the law, because they don't unless they research it. And I'm going to put up on our website some of the briefs that, in particular, like a guy like George Walker, who likes to brag he's had 500 criminal cases. This guy puts out boilerplate legal briefs, especially in the Steve Nery case, whom he ripped off at $35,000. So, you know, get away from the myth that only lawyers know the law. People, black letter law is simple. You're not dealing with difficult nuclear physics questions or chemical formulas or mechanical engineering that's complicated. You're dealing with simple black letter law that if you're fairly literate, you can read and understand and better know if you're ever caught in that position where you have to defend yourself or rely on a competent ethical lawyer to defend you. You know, ignorance is not bliss. What you don't know can hurt, harm, and cost you. So we'll end with our favorite theme, and it's very relevant today. And in November, right now, be aware that they're out there trying to figure out a way to do more vote fraud, to reinforce their position as the party in power. And we still believe that one of the reasons that they want continue this illegal migration is because these people have been offered housing, some of them, and they're registering to vote, and we have seen that, and we'll document that. You can go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube sites to see that, and also California's Against Voter Fraud. So here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Pony, up to you.
Say, Johnny, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a kick.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big Ace.
Ace Bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
Out of bounds, we should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of jacks, bet up.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and down. He's a game is rough. These seasons,
Well, yep. We don't need a qualified Republican to lose. We need qualified ethical people. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Thank you for listening and tune in Thursday, same time. Mm-hmm.